But what we're dealing with, these are Job's final words in his kind of what we would call a defense. We would call it his summary, his speech, the final rebuttal to his three friends that have done nothing but tear him down. They've been absolutely no help, no value to him. And so Job has established several things as far as what kind of a man he had been. He had been a man that had been on the top. He had experienced all that life had. He had great wealth. He was greatly respected. His opinion meant something. People wanted to talk to Job. They wanted to hear the wisdom that Job would have to share. So people would come from all around just to hear what Job had to say. And he's lost all of that. And the thing that we get to see, we know how the book ends. We know that what transpired at the beginning of the book is God challenging, basically, Satan, saying, "Have you considered my servant Job?" And this really is one of those strange kind of books that shows, and in the end it's going to prove one major thing. It will prove that a man will worship God simply because God is worthy to be worshipped, whether he receives anything from God or not. And that is really the premise that sets this book apart. Job does, and he does have, and we've seen that he kind of has an eye problem, where he talks about how I went to the city gate, I took my seat because I delivered the poor, and I helped people. And even though I don't think Job stood there boasting of this, you know, of his great accomplishments, I really don't see that. The man is broken. The man is a shambles. He's lost his health. He's lost his wealth. He's lost his family. He has lost tons of weight. The man is, he thinks he's near death. And he doesn't understand any of this. So I think Job was just reminiscing. And sometimes you can do that when you've been sick for a long time. You start to remember the days when you weren't sick. You can remember how it used to be. If you've been in pain for a long time, you remember what it was like when you didn't suffer the pain that you had. And so I don't think that this was really and truly Job boasting, but nonetheless, it is still Job reminiscing about how amazing he used to be. You can't deny that. We can't remove that from the equation. And so the one thing that Job is going to learn is that when he is asked on several occasions, "Man, if only I could bring and present my case before God, if only I could talk to God, if only there was someone, a mediator that would stand between me and God, if only there was some way that I could talk to him." And for us, we live in the time where all of Job's desires, all of his prayers, all of his wishes, we get it. We have a mediator. We have Jesus Christ that stands between God and man. We have one that takes our case before God. And Job didn't have that. He didn't even have, as we have learned, he didn't even have the law. He didn't have the written, he didn't have the books of Moses. This was a man that worshiped God because he saw that God was worthy to be worshiped. He looked around at probably the world around him. He looked at society. He looked at creation. And he said, "There is a God, and I'm going to worship that God." In a land where idolatry was rampant. And so Job really is, I think, one of the great men of faith in the Bible. And it's a funny thing that whenever people refer to Job, what is it that they refer to Job and or one of his character traits? Anybody know? Patience. "Oh, if I had the patience of Job," right? The wisdom of Solomon, the patience of Job. And yet, in all reality, I don't know if the patience of Job is really what we're going to learn about here. I think what we do learn about is the faith of Job. The faith of Job that he says, you know what? Because, I mean, haven't we seen a little bit of his impatience? Why? I wish I was dead. I wish I'd never been born. That doesn't sound like great patience to me. But what we will learn is that Job trusted God no matter what. And that's an amazing thing. So chapter 30, which I didn't want to get into, I didn't want to leave you with that one last week. Job is now, he's talked about in chapters really 28, 29, all of the things that used to be his. He reminisced for a moment of the past. He's looked back at the past and considered, you know, in essence, what he was, what his life was. And in chapter 30, he talks about what it is. And it's a sad chapter in some ways. But I want to, as we read through it, we're going to, of course, Job is our character, Job is the book, and it's about the man Job. But I want to ask you a simple question. As we read through this, see if it reminds you of someone else. Okay? So chapter 30, verse 1, we'll see how many we can get through tonight. But now, not as he's just finished up with before, okay? Now, presently, where I am right now, from the joy of his past to it, literally the sorrow of his present, now they mock me. Men younger than I, whose fathers I disdain to put with the dogs of my flock. In other words, these men, these kids are now mocking me, and their fathers were pieces of junk. I wouldn't even let them tend, you know, hang out with my sheepdogs. Now these kids are mocking me. Indeed, what profit is the strength of their hands to me? Their vigor has perished. What, you know, kind of a radical thing to say, that how Job is talking about them. They are gaunt from want and famine, fleeing late into the wilderness, desolate and waste. So he's referring to some of these men that are out there with him. So these kind of deadbeat dads that are existing in the area that are coming out, their kids are coming out visiting some of their fathers, and those kids are making fun of Job. Kind of a crazy thing. Fleeing late into the wilderness, desolate and waste, who pluck mallow by the bushes, broom tree roots for their food. These guys are out scrummaging for their food. They were driven out from among the men. They shouted at them as a thief. They had to live in the clefts of the valleys and caves of the earth and the rocks. Among the bushes they brayed, and under the nettles they nestled. I would say that one three times very quickly. They were the sons of fools. Yes, sons of vile men, and they were scourged from the land. So a look at these men that are the rejects, and now the reject sons are making fun of Job. Are you following that? You tracking with me? Okay. So we could literally say, let's keep going, then we'll come back to that. In verse 9, he says, "And now I am their taunting song." Yes, I am their byword. So he's not only the children are making fun of him, even these men that are living out in the scourge of the land are making fun of Job. "They abhor me. They, these dirt bags, keep far from me. And they do not hesitate to spit in my face. Because he has loosed my bowstring and afflicted me. So they have cast off restraint before me." So this man, can you imagine as Job sits there? I want you to hear the voice of a man that is saying, "Man, I was once the guy that people came from miles around to sit. They stood in line to ask me questions. They wanted my counsel. Now here I sit. I mean, I can't stay in the city because of my skin disease, so I'm out here in the land living with people that have been cast off, homeless basically, people that the world has rejected, and now I'm lower than they are. They're the ones that are spitting on me." So you can imagine as Job contemplates, he goes, "Man, I went from respected to rejected. Or literally, you know, in our culture, we would say from a hero to a zero. And you can hear his kind of broken heart as he's sharing these things. But I want you to ask you a question. Does this sound familiar to you? Okay. So at my, let's see, they at verse 12, at my right hand, the rabble arises. They push away at my feet. And they raise against me their ways of destruction. They break up my path. They promote my calamity. They're trying to trip him. They're trying to stumble him. They have no helper. They come as broad breakers under the ruinous storm. They roll along. Terrors are turned up, are turned upon me. They pursue my honor as the wind, and my prosperity has passed like a cloud. So Job basically said, I'm about as low as I can get. Now they try to trip me. I feel like I'm a helpless man. I'm a sick, weak man. I have been beaten down, and yet they still spit in my face, try to trip me, and try to literally set traps in front of me. Does this sound vaguely familiar to you? Interestingly enough, it's exactly what men did to Jesus on his final days. That here he went from the man that literally would have thousands of people up in the Galilee area, which those of you going to Israel with us, we'll show you these areas. Okay? Jesus was sitting there. People were coming to him from miles around on one day. They wanted to hear what Jesus had to say. They wanted to see the miracles that he would perform. They wanted to be around him. And then the next minute, they're spitting in his face. They're putting bags over his head and punching him. He went from, you know, the majestic one. He went from respected to rejected in an overnight turnaround. They were trying to trip him. They put the cross upon him and tried to trip him. They tried to stumble him. They tried to push him. So, in an amazing thing, Job, I wonder if Jesus was watching this saying, wow, I'm headed for that someday. But little did Job know that in all reality, as he's talking about the fact that I was once this great man and now look at where I am. I'm at the bottom of the barrel. I'm the scourge of the land. Little did he know that in man's perspective, Job has gone down. But in God's perspective, Job's moving up. Because it's just that way in the kingdom. It's usually the exact opposite of what we think. Job's being humbled, and in his humility, he's being raised up. And little does he know that all of this is about to turn around for him. He doesn't know that, because he doesn't understand any of this. Verse 16, and now my soul is poured out because of my plight. The days of affliction take hold of me. You know, now he's saying, my heart, my soul is poured out. My heart is broken. Here, literally, because of my plight, the days of affliction take hold of me. You can hear that he's literally saying, I am battling with depression here. It's trying to grab me and take me down. If you've ever, had to deal with like the fog of oppression or depression, it literally feels like something reaching out and grabbing a hold of you, doesn't it? When you say, man, I just feel like I don't know what happened, and it is a feeling, but when you start to sink into depression because you're for whatever reason that may be, you can feel it grabbing you, trying to pull you down. It's a real feeling. And this is what Job is trying to describe. My bones, he says, verse 17, are pierced in me at night, and my gnawing pains take no rest. You know, one of the things that I think there are times, especially when you're in a dark place like Job is at, it's a funny thing how if you've ever talked to someone who is kind of either from pain, physical pain, or from emotional pain, when, you know, depression from those things, and really it's just where we begin to focus on the pain. That's what really leads to depression. You start to focus on the pain or the cause of the pain. And so one of the things that people do, and you can tell this, I mean, sometimes when you're dealing with a friend that suddenly they don't want to get out of bed, they don't want to leave their house, then you know, uh-oh, they're starting to sink. But the funny thing about depression is you can't even sleep. Sleep doesn't even bring joy to you. And the darkness of the night is when you're most vulnerable, because now you're laying there and you're wide awake and you just wish, if I could only sleep, then I would feel better. But I would be able to hide from this. And Job can't even do that, because normally somebody that's in that state can't. And I know for me, one of the crazy things, if you've ever been in a hospital for any length of time, there is something weird about hospitals at nighttime. How many of you have ever spent nights in hospitals? Okay. Freaky, man. Really a freaky thing. I don't know what it was. For me, it felt like, you know, and I was already, you know, my physical sickness was already just like getting me, right? And then at night, it just felt like Satan was just breathing on me, you know. And I can tell you the only thing that worked, guy came down and brought me a little wafer, and he gray taped some speakers on the wall, and he loaded it with worship music, and I tell you, then I slept. It's an amazing thing. We would turn it on, and you know, you're supposed to ask permission to do this kind of stuff. We apologize, and instead of ask for permission, because I'm telling you, you put praise music on, and I tell you, Satan will not mess with you. And so the moment we set that up, I told him, I said, guy, I don't know what it is. I was telling him and Mari, I cannot sleep here. I feel like I'm being attacked by the enemy at night. And so guy goes, I got an idea for that. And he leaves, he comes back, and he's taping up these little battery-powered speakers. And so it was kind of cool. Some of the nurses came in and go, wow, that's cool, you know. But I tell you, then, and only then, was I able to sleep in that place. So if you struggle with sleep, turn on praise music and watch what happens. So verse 18, by great force, my garment is disfigured. It binds me about as the collar of my coat. He has cast me into the mire, and I have become like dust and ashes. I feel like God has literally picked me up and tossed me out onto the ground and walked on me. I cry out to you. See the capital Y. So now he's speaking as if he's crying out, talking to God. But you do not answer me. I stand up. You do not regard me. But you've become cruel to me. And by the way, we're going to meet a new character in the next chapter here, or actually in chapter 32. And he's going to look at the way Job is referring to God. And that's going to be kind of what he argues, because basically Job is accusing God of being cruel here. I stand up, you do not regard me. Verse 21, but you have become cruel to me. With the strength of your hand, you oppose me. You lift me up to the wind and cause me to ride on it. You spoil my success. For I know that you will bring me to death, to the house appointed for all the living. So basically he's saying, God, you've trashed me. I've cried out to you. You don't listen. I'm not hearing anything from you. And now ultimately you're just going to drag me to the place of death and throw me into the grave. So Job saying, once I was a blessing, as he described that in chapter 29, now he's talking about, now I feel like I'm nothing but a curse. Verse 24, now remember in chapter 29, he talked about how he helped so many people, the poor, the widows, he helped all these people. Surely, now he says, verse 24, he would not stretch out his hand against a heap of ruins if they cry out. When he destroys it, have I not wept for him who was in trouble? Has not my soul grieved for the poor? So in other words, Job kind of saying, man, I helped others. Now nobody's here to help me. Verse 26. But when I looked for good, evil came to me. And when I waited for light, then came darkness. My heart is in turmoil. It cannot rest. Days of affliction confront me. I go about mourning, but not in, but not in the sun. I stand up in the assembly and I cry out for help. So I was at one point, he was saying, I was looking forward to a prosperous future. I was looking forward to just spending my days and dying as an old man who is, you know, at peace with his neighbors, and I've done all these good things. Now basically saying, now the future looks very bleak to me. Now my future looks like it's going to be a difficult days and then ultimately darkness, and I'm going to die. So you can tell this man is sinking. Can you feel it? But when I look for good, verse 26, oh, I already did that. Verse 29, I am the brother of jackals and a companion of ostriches. My skin grows black and falls from me. This describes the skin disease. My bones burn with fever. My harp is turned to mourning, my flute to the voice of those who weep. I once had a ministry, now it's gone. No one will even come near me because my skin of disease that I have. And so Job describes this, where he once was, then he looks at where he is. And in chapter 31, he kind of takes us and we get a peek in at a little bit of his future. But one thing that he does in this chapter, remember, all along he's defended his innocence. Now, I want you to remember something. Job has never once said that he is without sin. He is just saying, I don't believe that it's sin that has caused this punishment. I've looked and I've looked and I've tried to see. He's never claimed that he's perfect. But he said, I don't see anything that is worthy of the punishment that I'm dealing with here. So now, Job does something a little bit different than what he's done all along. Job will say, you know what? I looked into my heart and I wanted to just check my heart and see, all right, is there sin somewhere inside of my heart? I've asked God to prove my innocence someday in the future. So I'm going to just take a good look, because Job says, listen, I know that sin, or literally sins, I know the sin or sins that trap men, that sometimes it begins in the heart. So I took a good look in my own heart to find out, how am I doing here? And that's what Job kind of speaks about right here. So he tells his listeners, some of whom are his three friends, but I think you'll see there's a group of other people, we're going to meet one of them. Some of them were standing around just checking this out as Job's getting kicked while he's down. And so he's going to kind of show these guys that, you know, I took steps. I don't believe that I'm suffering because of sin. In fact, I even took steps not to sin. Because I looked inside of my heart. I want to make sure that I didn't do this. So that's what this, where this begins, okay? So men in the room, chapter 31, verse 1 is an amazing chapter, and we're going to spend a little bit of time on that. Job says, I made a covenant. I have made a covenant with my eyes. Why then should I look upon a young woman? Let me ask you a question. What sin for a man begins in the heart when he looks with lust upon a woman? Anybody know? Fornication, adultery, sexual sin. Okay, you with me? Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, he deals with much of the Sermon on the Mount. If you read through it, you'll see it repeated over and over and over. If a man looks at a woman to lust for her in his heart, then he's committed adultery with her in his heart. Okay? So, Job, knowing that the sin of adultery would begin in the heart, is saying, guys, I have not committed the sin of adultery. In fact, I made a covenant with my eyes so that I wouldn't sin against them. I took steps to not even go near that place. And so this particular verse, chapter 31, verse 1, is an awesome verse for any man to look at that and to not only just know what it says, but to do what Job did. Now, and this applies more to men because God designed us men to be visual. And so here I encourage men to do the same thing that Job did, to recognize that sexual sin begins in the heart. So it's important to make a covenant with your eyes. Now, what does that mean? It means to say, God, I'm going to give these eyes to you. I'm going to enter into an agreement. I'm going to enter my eyes into a marriage with the Lord. That I'm not going to look upon a young woman and lust for her in my heart. So the word to look upon means to stare with lust. So is it wrong if a man happens to just look and, whoa, there happens to be a poster or a billboard? The first look, we will say, is free. However, when I say the first look, I don't mean, okay, well, since this one's free, I'm gonna get all I can for free right now. That's not what it means. The accidental first look is free. So if a man happens to look, whoa, then comes into the covenant. I've made a covenant. So I'm going to bounce my eyes from that direction back onto the things of the Lord. And it's very important, men, because as we all know as men, you don't have to, as a young boy, doesn't have to go hunt for pornography. Satan will bring it to you. He'll help you find it. He'll put it in your fort. He has his plans. And now, I mean, it's even easier because the internet's right there. So we as men have to follow the example of Job. Job recognized, I want to look inside my own heart. I know where this stuff begins. So before I even get close to it, I want to make a covenant with my eyes. I want to make a commitment with my eyes. I want to enter my eyes into a marriage with the Lord to where they're not even going to get near it to where I can enter myself or get myself involved in sexual sin. I can tell you, in Russia, it's crazy over there. We think, you know, everybody thinks, oh, California is so terrible. I mean, the way the girls dress, you go, listen, here we were in Russia, and these girls were wearing see-through stuff that was like, what would we call it, Mari? I'm trying to be careful here. It was like, are you serious? I mean, you could see everything through these sheer clothes. They're walking around the middle of the day, summertime, obviously, not the winter. Okay. And I got a bunch of guys. We're on a missions trip over there. I got a bunch of guys with me. So the men come to me and say, Rob, what do we do? And in Russia, as in Germany, they are allowed to put topless pictures. Like, for instance, I don't know if they do that in Scotland or not, in Britain. I don't know. But I can tell you, in some of Europe, you know, perfume advertisements and whatnot, topless. And so here I've got a bunch of guys with us, and they're saying, Rob, you know, what do we do with this, man? So we did two things. I took them back to the hotel room, and I said, we're going to make a covenant with our eyes right now. We're going to enter into a covenant with our eyes and the Lord where we're not going to look at this. I mean, some of it you can't help. You see it, but then you bounce your eyes back, and then we issue a warning. Don't look to the left. Now, of course, immediately, what does the human man want to do, you know? We even hired the girls to help us. We put the girls out in front so our own girls would warn us, don't look to the right. And, I mean, of course, then the first thing you want to do is, what? You know, so some of our cheaters. So make a covenant. Men, listen to me. Make a covenant with your eyes. This is something you know, some guys say, well, let's do it together as men and make a covenant with another man that you're not going to... No, no, no. Listen, this kind of a covenant is much deeper than a commitment that you make to a brother. A covenant is something you enter into an agreement with God. Because God knows what your brother doesn't know. God sees what our brother doesn't see. And so Job recognized that the sins that he was being accused of, he says, look, I want to check my own heart. I want you to know that I even took a good heart check. In fact, to keep me from committing adultery, I made a covenant with my eyes so that I wouldn't even get near that stuff. And I think one thing that we can say not only about the patience of Job, we'll call it the wisdom of Job. That's a wise thing to do, man. I did this personally a long time ago. Had to enlist the help. I mean, you guys, listen to me. Get your wives to help you. Get your, and I mean, I know it's a kind of one of those crazy things that sometimes when we bring this to our wives' attention, they go, man, are you that sick? Are you that much of a pervert? No. God created us to be visual, so Satan knows that. Listen, when God brought Eve, Adam goes to sleep, and what does he do? He takes his rib, makes Eve. Adam wakes up Adam, and he brings her to him. And Adam does say, well, not bad. Tell you what, leave her here. We'll talk. I'll get to know her. We'll have coffee, have a cup of tea. I'll spend some time with her, get to know her, and I'll let you know, God, if this is going to work out or not. Is that what he says? No. Whoa. Now that's bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. He looked at her, and instantly he was attracted. God made us that way. And God said, it is good. I want you to be attracted to your wife. I want you to desire her. I want you to look upon your wife and desire her. Satan says, how can I pervert that? Here, look at something different. And he creates the images of many different things. I mean, much of what in Greece and Italy that they call artwork now was pornography in its day. Statues. Now they say, wow, look at that beautiful piece of artwork. And the men of the day, they looked at it as pornography. So Satan wants to put something in a man's eye to turn his attention, to turn his gaze away from his bride. So girls, help your husbands with this stuff. I mean, you know, since I used to, don't get them hardly anymore, but we'd get these motorcycle part magazines, you know, since I ride a motorcycle, and my wife and my daughter would have fun with that. Here, Dad, here's what's left of your parts magazine. You know, we shredded out all the stuff that you don't need to see. That's okay. Do that. So girls, sometimes you need to help your husbands. And so, but for us men, make a covenant with your eyes. This is between you and the Lord, where you just say, God, from this point forward, I will not look at that. I will not turn my computer on in the middle of the night. Men, if that becomes a problem for you, wives, you get the password, and husbands, you have to go to your wife to make her turn the computer on. There are many things. I know some men that says, you know what, I'm just, what did he do in that movie? What was it? Fireproof. He took his computer, threw it out in the backyard. I mean, if you have to do that, to keep your covenant with your eyes and do that. Does that make sense, guys? I don't know. Okay. What is the allotment, verse 2, of God from above? And the inheritance of the Almighty from on high? Is it not destruction for the wicked and disaster for the workers of iniquity? Does he not see my ways and count all my steps? So Job is recognizing, hey, I know I've made this covenant because God sees all this stuff. And he knows who's violating. And so Job asked God to, you know, to prove his innocence in the future. So he says, God, you examine my heart. So now watch what he does in verse 5. If I have walked with falsehood, or if my foot has hastened to deceit, there's a good clue of what he's going to describe right here. Let me be weighed on honest scales, that God may know my integrity. If my step has turned away from the way, or my heart has walked after my eyes, or if any spot adheres to my hands, then let me sow and another eat. Yes, let my harvest be rooted out. See verse 8, you might want to highlight that. Job does a few things where he says, if I've done this, well then let me suffer the consequence right here. And I'll show you, there's several of them in this chapter 31. I'll show them to you. So basically, Job here is saying, God, I checked my heart. In my heart of hearts, I was an honest businessman. I didn't cheat people. I used honest scales. I was a man of integrity in my heart. My heart is clean. I wasn't a deceptive guy. And so, you know, God, if I'm being punished for sin, show me what it is so that I can bring it to you. But obviously, Job is saying, look, I looked in my heart and I don't see it. I mean, if I was, then, hey, let me sow and let somebody else eat the food that I've sown. Verse 9. If in my heart, or if my heart has been enticed by a woman, or if I have lurked at my neighbor's door, that's another way of saying, if I was watching my neighbor's wife to see when he wasn't going to be there, and I'm saying, okay, I think I got it figured out. I know when she's all alone. Okay, so that would be, he's plotting to get her alone. Okay, does that make sense? Then, and I had to look this one up, let my wife grind for another and let others bow down over her. Literally, that means let my wife grind meal for someone else. Let her be a slave or be employed, excuse me, if you will, by someone other, another man. Literally, the New Living Translation says, let my wife belong to someone else. And let that man sleep with her. So, you see, as he did in verse 8, hey, if I've done this, then let this be my consequence. So basically, Job says here, listen, if I have been a guy that has been watching out, if I have been a guy that in my heart I've been watching another man's wife, well, by golly, then if that is true, then let my wife belong to somebody else and let that man sleep with my wife. So he's basically pronouncing, if I've done that, then I would be willing to suffer that consequence. Does that make sense, guys? Okay. For that would be wickedness. Yes. It would be iniquity deserving of judgment. For that would be a fire that consumes to destruction and would root out all my increase. So then, basically, I would deserve this. You know, ultimately, you know, adultery, basically Job is saying that would be, and as if you've ever been through that, if, and maybe some of you have, where if your spouse committed adultery on you, that is the ultimate rejection. I don't know if it can get more painful than that. The ultimate of rejection, beyond measure, and that's what Job is basically saying here. If I had ever done that, then I would deserve the ultimate punishment because that's one of the ultimate crimes in a marriage relationship. Verse 13, if I have despised the cause of my male servant, my male or female servant, when they complain against me, what then shall I do when God raises up? When he punishes, how shall I answer him? Did not he who made me in the womb make them? Did not the same one fashion us in the womb? So here Job saying, listen, in my heart, I treated my employees the way I wanted to be treated. I understand we were all created. We're all created by God. They were made by God just as I was, so I treated them that way. So I've searched my heart. I've never treated any of my employees in any way other than with great fairness. And he'll talk a little bit more about the employees too. Verse 16, if I have kept the poor from their desire, or caused the eyes of the widow to fail, or eaten my morsel myself, so that the fatherless could not eat of it. But from my youth I reared him as a father, and from my mother's womb I guided the widow. If I have seen anyone perish or lacking clothing, or any poor man without covering, if his heart has not blessed me, and if he was not warmed with the fleece of my sheep, if I have raised my hand against the fatherless when I saw, and I, when I saw I had help in the gate, then, let my arm fall off of my shoulder. Let my arm be torn from the socket. For destruction from God is a terror to me. And because of his magnificence, I cannot endure. So basically here, Job says, man, as I've sat here, rotting away, I've been thinking, I've gone back in my mind, I've tried to think, God, did I do this? No. I treated my neighbors fairly. I treated the strangers fair. I looked at how I treated my employees. I've checked my heart in all of these ways. I was always honorable to people. I never mistreated anyone. And so if I did, wow, then I could understand. Wow, if I raised my hand against someone, then let my own arm fall out of my socket. Do you see how he pronounces his own judgment? So you know what? Do me a favor, because he, well, you know what? We'll come back to it. Because he kind of moves into a new direction, and then he comes back to the neighbor kind of thing here, down in verse 29. But verse 24, he goes on to say, and see if you can pick this one out. If I have made gold my hope, or said to fine gold, you are my confidence. If I have rejoiced because my wealth was great, and because my hand had gained much, if I had observed the sun when it shines, or the moon moving in brightness, so that my heart has been secretly enticed, and my mouth has kissed my hand, this would be an iniquity deserving of judgment, for I would have denied God who is above all. So here, can you see that Job is basically saying, listen, I was rich, I was wealthy, I had everything, but I never worshipped my gold. Do people worship their riches in our culture? Oh yeah, they do. It's very easy to do. Job was saying, look, I was stinking rich. I had much gold. I had much silver. I never looked at the sun, and I never worshipped the sun. Job basically says in that little section right there, as I looked back, I mean, I was stinking rich, but I didn't worship my money. I didn't worship my possessions. I didn't worship the sun like others did, Ra. God, I only worshipped you. I've checked my heart, and the only place that I worshipped was God. So, then he goes back and he kind of connects this back with 16 through 23, where he talks about being, the man of integrity with the people that were around him. If, verse 29, I have rejoiced at the destruction of him who hated me, or lifted myself up with when evil found him, indeed I have not allowed my mouth to sin by asking for a curse on his soul. In other words, if somebody, you know, hated me, I didn't curse them. If the men of my tent have not said, who is there that has not been satisfied with his meat? But no sojourner had to lodge in the street, for I have opened my doors to the traveler. Job says, listen, if somebody needed a place to stay, I gave him a place to stay. If I have covered my transgression as Adam by hiding my iniquity in my bosom, did Adam try to hide his sin? Covering? Oh, yeah. Fig leaf covering. Wasn't a good one. Because I feared the great multitude, I didn't do things because of political correctness, basically. And dreaded the contempt of families so that I kept silence. I didn't allow political correctness did not control me. I checked my own heart. And I didn't go out my door. Now look at this, verse 35. Oh, that I had one to hear me. Here's my mark. Oh, that the Almighty would answer me, that my prosecutor had written a book. Surely I would carry it on my shoulder and bind it on me like a crown. I would declare him the number of my steps like a prince. I would approach him. Here Job is just once again crying out, God, oh, if there was only some way that I could, if you're not going to listen to me, if only there was some way that I could get someone to hear this and bring it to your attention. Job is praying once again for that intercessor. And the amazing thing is, let me ask you a question. Even though God has not answered Job yet. Even though God has not responded to any of his cries for him to speak. Question, is God listening? Does God hear? Does he know what's going on? You bet he does. So even though Job is in this miserable place, God is going to speak. He will. But in this place, I wish we could just jump into the story and say, Job, God is listening. And soon enough, buddy, he's going to answer. And when he does answer, your life and all this that you're learning to trust God. Job, it's all going to be for good. Don't you wish you could just jump in and tell this? And, by the way, Job, all that you've been through and this lesson that you're learning on trusting God is being written in a book called the Book of Job. You don't know it yet, buddy, but it is being written. I mean, don't you wish you could say that my prosecutor had written a book? Don't you wish you could go in and say, Job, it is a book, and your name's on it, dude. It's going to be so cool. But we can't do that. If my land, check this out. If my land cries out against me and its furrows weep together, if I have eaten its fruit without money or caused its owners to lose their lives, then here's another one. Here's another where he pronounces his own judgment. Then let thistles grow instead of wheat and weeds instead of barley. Sounds like Ramona. So Job basically saying, listen, in my heart, I've been a good steward. I've treated people fairly. I've treated my employees fairly. I've always been a guy that helps others. Even the way I treated the land was right. If you're sitting here like Job's been sitting here, and you're checking your own heart, and you're thinking, well, maybe as a farmer I was cruel to the earth, and now that's why I'm being punished. Job goes, no, I treated the land with fairness. Treated it with fairness. Can't be that. So basically, Job is saying, God, if I'm guilty, I'm willing to pay the price. But that's not what's going on. So Job has basically searched his heart, and he cannot see what he has done, that he is being punished. Now I want you to see the final words of verse 40. Do you see what it is? The words of Job are ended. Right there, that's it for Job. He is physically, he is emotionally, he is spiritually spent. And I wish I could jump into this and say, oh, Job, you're not being punished. You're learning to trust God. You're going to go through something. You're shut in the mouth of Satan by your actions. Because you won't curse God and die. Because you won't beg for God to get your stuff back. You are silencing the enemy. You're proving to the enemy that man will worship God because he's worthy. Job, I wish that I could just share that with you. And here what's radical, it says, the words of Job are ended, and still God remains silent. Still God says nothing. Next, we're going to meet a guy named Elihu. Interesting guy. It means God, literally, God of him, or literally, he is my God, if you translate it correctly. So, Elihu, I want to encourage you to read 6 chapters, if you can. I'll tell you why, okay? You're going to meet a guy that now comes in with a different approach. He's been sitting here. He's someone that's been sitting there watching this whole conversation happen between Job's 3 friends, and now he becomes the 4th guy. And he's obviously younger because he has to tell us who he is, and literally the entire chapter of 32, he's basically telling everyone why he's worthy of being listened to. That's what young guys do, okay? But he approaches this from an interesting aspect. Remember, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar have said, Job, you're suffering because you've committed sin, and God's punishing you for the sin that you've committed. Job's completely silenced them. In fact, we won't even hear from Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. They're completely, at this point, they're out of the picture. Zophar comes in and says, you know what, I'm sick and tired of this. Job, I'm tired of listening to you. And furthermore, I'm tired of listening to those three losers that didn't give you any answer. So the young puck comes in and kind of slams him. But what he does is very, very interesting. Okay? And I'm going to share this with you so that as you read through these next few chapters, and we're almost done. We're going to, you know, we'll try and finish this in the next couple of weeks. But he comes in and he introduces a different perspective. They're saying, Job, you must have sinned. That's why you're suffering. So Elihu comes in and says, Job, in your suffering, two things are happening. So check this out. Because you're in the midst of this suffering, that's why you're now choosing to sin. Okay, check this out. They, his other friends, are saying, you must have done something in the past to deserve this. So Elihu comes in and says, Job, you're going through a time of suffering, and in the midst of your suffering, instead of responding in a correct way, you're sinning now. Your pride is coming out. You're saying, I have done nothing wrong. And he points to what's happening in the present. But then he does something even more interesting. And that can sometimes be a reality. Sometimes when we go through times of difficulty, how we handle that difficulty can sometimes be sinful. If in the midst of our pain and our suffering we become bitter and grouchy and mean, are we not in that situation in sin? Has not that time of difficulty revealed that we're not doing too good? Does that make sense, guys? Okay. So he points that out. Secondly, he points out, you'll see it if you read ahead. The second thing that he points out is this. Elihu says, Job, sometimes God allows suffering and he allows pain to save us from sin in the future, to prevent it in the future. How? Sometimes when we go through present suffering, present difficulty, it humbles us, it breaks us, and prevents us from doing something arrogant or foolish in the future. Is that possible? You better believe it is. Can God not allow, all of a sudden we think we're untouchable, we think we're doing pretty good, and a trial comes, hits us, it humbles us to where we're seeking the face and the heart of God, and that then prevents us from making a stupid mistake in the future. Is that possible? You bet it is. Now then, even though both of those are, it's a beautiful argument, and it's good truth, it ain't Job's issue. Even though it's true, Job's issue is something far bigger than even that. Even though I do believe that God will use those two things in Job's future. Job's issue is, this is an issue between God, Satan, saying, have you considered my servant Job? Job's not suffering. And is he in sin? No. In the present, it's his interpretation of Job. Is it preventing Job from sinning in the future? Maybe. But that's not what the real deal is here. The real deal is something that between God, pointing to Job, God is doing something in Job. So take a look. It's an amazing picture, honestly. But I see for us, did God use time of great pain and great suffering to change me in the future? Boy, I sure hope it did. I sure hope it did, because that would have sure been a waste. And I hope that it prevented me from, when God humbles a person, I think it does alter them for the future. I sure hope it does, you know. But one thing I am thankful of, man, what Job was crying out for, oh, if there was only someone that would hear me. Aren't you glad that when you and I close our eyes and we say, Jesus, I need your help, that you know he hears? Lord, we thank you for the story of Job. We thank you for the section that we read through tonight. And even though from this point forward Job is silent, you are still silent. Another man begins to speak. Another man brings his opinion. And ultimately, you will bring in your answer. And so, Lord, we thank you so much for what you're doing. Thank you that we have a God who hears, and we know that. Job didn't know how much you loved him. Job didn't understand how much you cared for him. We know how much you love us because you sent Jesus to die in our place. So, Lord, we thank you. We know that when we're going through times of difficulty, it's only because you love us. So, Jesus, let us walk out of this room tonight greatly aware of your love for us. In Jesus' name, amen.